Welcome to the Break the Mold Parking Podcast with myself, Ryan Jackson.
And me, Alistair Finlayson.
And in each episode, we'll be discussing the very latest in parking news and industry insights,
as well as cutting-edge business and thought leadership topics.
Welcome back to another episode of Break the Mold, the Parking Podcast. I'm Alistair Finlayson with my co-host,
Mr. Ryan Jackson.
And today we're joined by a guest who is somewhat of an expert on the topic that we're going to delve into. He's Mr. Gareth Robinson, the commercial director from the Park Now Group, or Ringo, as more commonly known as. Gareth, welcome to the show.
Delighted to be here, guys. Thanks ever so much for inviting me.
We first had this conversation about doing this back in March at the British Parking Awards.
I remember it well.
Off the back, well, I'm glad you do, because I certainly don't. But we had, off the back of an article I had published in Parking Review about, is the world ready to go cashless? And back then it was just sort of a little bit of an idea. We wanted to delve into the trends in the market and where things are going. And then boom, COVID sort of hit. It's delayed our recording of this episode by, you know, half a year almost. But not just that, it's also changed the landscape of the market significantly. So I kind of feel like it's almost a blessing in disguise that it's now more relevant than ever, with everything being pushed into a cashless agenda. You know, are we there? Are we ready? Let's just talk about some of the data that you may have, because I'm sure you've got a wealth of it being in this space. Does the data that you've got captured suggest that the parking industry is ready to have that transition where we completely remove cash?
Yes. It's an interesting conundrum, really, because if you ask me this question around the March time, the answer would be different. Mm-hmm. The answer today is very much and overwhelmingly yes. So since we all started to get back into the groove of things throughout July, my professional services director has stated on a number of occasions he's never known it to be so busy. And what he's really pointing towards is that particularly the local authorities have started to make a significant drive in terms of not investing in hardware, not investing in machines, not investing in the idea and the concept of Mr. and Mrs. Jones having to queue up behind each other to put a coin in a machine, which when you think about it in today's day, it's archaic. And the whole pandemic has really accelerated that process now. So now local authorities, health and safety reasons being a key driver, of course, are obviously saying we need to make sure that we remove all of our machines. By removing machines, we're now giving Mr. and Mrs. Jones the opportunity to stay within their car, within the privacy and confinements of their own environment, and pay for parking. And that has changed dramatically. So if you look at where we were on the 23rd of March to where we are now, you're starting to see a massive pendulum swing of in the region of 50% of our local authorities have simply said all cashless.
But cashless doesn't necessarily only mean sort of app-based, and we know various P&D providers have started really pushing their card-only payment terminals. And so do you see the card-only terminal working in conjunction with the app, or do you think it's just a placeholder until the sort of local demographic have fully embedded and embraced the use of an app on a smartphone?
Can I just say, Gareth, following on from that, where do you think this whole shift actually leaves machine manufacturers?
Two great questions. So let me answer both as I go along. So I think manufacturers are at that place where, if you look at Betamax and the transition from Betamax, I think that's exactly where those manufacturers are. They are becoming dinosaurs and they are finding themselves in a very difficult position that they need to make that transition. So I think it's going to be a very, very difficult journey over the next 2 to 3 years for those manufacturers. In regards to the card machines, I think they're nothing more than placeholders. They're an interim solution on that final journey to a complete cashless environment. The thing is, it's not a question of when, it's a question of the train has already left the station and everyone is jumping on board right now.
Do you think with the machine manufacturers, do you think it's a bit of negligence on their part? In a sense of when you look at other industries, let's just say transportation, taxis, you know, out of nowhere, Uber arrived, there was no way of foreseeing it. And, you know, within a short period of time, they've just taken over that industry. And as we see it, black taxis, they've become prehistoric. They've become dinosaurs. Now, he's always been looming that cash was going to be demonized and it was going to be that shift towards a more cashless society. So do you think it was maybe perhaps denial with the parking manufacturers? Or, you know, should they have seen this coming? Or do you think they were just trying to hold on to old ways of doing things and an old paradigm?
Regrettably, it's the latter. It's holding on to those old paradigms, because if you've been through the industry since man and boy, you know no better. Mm. And innovators are the ones that want to stretch the boundaries. I remember very keenly when I worked at Kodak, and I was this young business exec coming up through the ranks of Kodak, and they asked me to present to the board of directors, what's the future? And I said, guys, the future is called the internet, and everything's going to be published via the internet. And they threw me out the office. They said, well, what's this kid know? You know, we're on film. The film is still the future. But maybe he's got a point. We'll transition from films to CDs. So, and that's that interim step that I was referring to, Ryan. You know, we've made that significant step now. And it's not CDs, it's completely digital. And I think, Ryan, from your point, the manufacturers have seen it that way, and I've seen it for years. And exactly the same, black taxi cabs. I used to take black taxi cabs from London to my home in Winchester on a Friday night after a couple of beers. And, you know, at the time I didn't realize how much it cost, but I certainly did Saturday morning. And, I used to wake up and say to my wife, there's got to be a much more cost-effective way than using these black cabs. And I have no sympathy whatsoever for a black cab driver. I think Uber provides a service, providing it continues to do it in a much more professional means than it has done to date.
And it's quite interesting that sort of all of the future developers are moving on to an app, because, you know, being sort of we're all young, we're all sort of app savvy, we've all got smartphones. But what about those that haven't? And that's not just an age demographic. I don't want to say intellect, because I'm not saying you have to be intelligent to use a smartphone, but there are people even sort of my age that don't cope well with apps. Now, if we are starting to rip out P&D machines from the ground and make everything cashless, you know, I would manage in that environment, because that's how I live anyway. I've got about 14 apps on my phone because every council decides to use something different. But what about those users that sort of necessarily haven't got the apps, or those individuals that haven't got a bank account? Because believe it or not, in 2020, there are people that haven't got bank accounts, which I don't understand how they get by, but that person is out there.
Yeah, I totally agree with that point. And as an organization, for us, you know, people always think of Ringo Park now as organization that just is all about getting more cars on the road. Quite the opposite. You know, if you look at our organization, most of our time is spent in thinking of ways in which we can get cars off the road and getting us to travel in a much more effective and efficient mode. By example, EV, we're a big driver of the ability of not only parking your EV vehicle, but also the ability to charge using our app via the EV vehicle, as an example. So we're very progressive in the area of reducing the combustion engine and reducing the impact it has on CO2 emissions and so forth. But coming to your point, all of our solutions, we always think of the lowest common denominator. And we have this terrible expression, which I think I came up with, so forgive me, but I've always asked the question, so if everything is app, what happens to Dolis? And what happens to Doris, who lives in Dolis Hill? She, you know, she's 80 years of age, she has a whippet, and every morning she goes and gets coffee and a newspaper from the newsagent. How do we handle Doris? And the way to do that is to have a retail option. And that's what we have. We signed an agreement with PayPoint for that exact expressed reason, to ensure that we can handle everyone, whether you're disabled, whether you're too infirm, or you simply don't want to get on the train of having a mobile phone. And I can understand some people not wanting to get on that train, by the way. But you've got to be able to have an ability to say, right, as a responsible provider of a solution, a mobility solution, we've got to be able to provide it to the lowest common denominator. Mm. And we're always looking to do that.
That's quite an interesting, I was not aware of that at all whatsoever. So PayPoint, am I understanding correct? It's you could essentially go into a shop or some a train station example to the ticket counter and say, you know, you want to pay for your parking. So, you know, that's great for things like train stations or retail, but what do we do about, you know, these remote car parks that potentially for a sort of town, for a sort of city centre, would you then need to have retailers sign up for that scheme?
Yeah, and I think that's the purpose in which you'll still have, when I think of leisure centres as an example, I still think there's a requirement for leisure centres to still have a card machine as an example. And I think that's still relevant for certain people. So whilst I believe that card machine have a very limited life at this moment in time, there's still an important transition before moving completely to a cashless environment. And in fact, we coexist. We have many relationships with operators who we coexist with a card machine and the cashless opportunity. I was talking to a very senior executive from one of the largest property companies in the UK, and they manage big retail parks up and down the UK and some exceedingly well-known ones around the globe. And his own admission was, you know, Gareth, we've got all these card machines everywhere, but we don't do any cashless, and we're missing the opportunity. So he's coming from the other extreme.
Yeah.
And he realizes that you've got to be able to provide the complete solution as an end user if you're going to be able to meet the requirements of today.
What can cashless providers do to distinguish themselves from other providers? Because it will become, if it isn't already, a very much saturated market. So what sort of other initiatives or features can cashless providers offer that will distinguish them from that of other providers?
Great question, Ryan. You know, I get a bit irritated sometimes, and that's just because I want to be really innovative all the time at the front end. I get irritated about simply being called a parking app. In 5 years' time, Ringo Park Now will not be known as a parking app. Ringo will be known, and Park Now will be known as a mobility app. So if you want to charge your EV vehicle, Ringo. If you want to go and buy fuel at a petrol station, Ringo. If you want to go through a tolling station, Ringo. If you want to MOT your car, Ringo. So there are so many other areas that we are currently working on and have done a significant amount of development with and significant amount of work in partner with other organizations where the parking piece will provide merely just an entrance to the world, the journey of which our solution can overall provide.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that sort of triggered back onto a point I made earlier, which we sort of didn't really delve into. And as I said earlier, you go to one car park, you've got one app. You go to another car park, you've got another app. I won't name any names because I don't want to give anyone free publicity, although it seems like Park Now are doing just fine with that right now. But, you know, what can the app providers do to make this an easier process? Because people have just got apps and apps and apps on their phone. I've actually have a whole folder on my phone with various apps for different councils that I've used once, and I just keep it because I've got an account. I never know when I'm going to need it again if I go to that remote car park in Southend.
Absolutely. I have a dream. It's yes, it's a dream, but it's not too far from reality, where up and down the United Kingdom, wherever you are, whether you're in a retail park, or whether you're in a train station car park, or whether you're just in an on-street or off-street parking area, you will have one or two apps that will provide that entire plethora of parking solutions. So whether you want to pay with Park Now or whether you want to pay with somebody else, it's a multi-environment that you can still use the Ringo parking app to pay with. So obviously other parking cashless providers will get a piece of that action. But as I said, parking will become a small part of our revenue, albeit it's growing, but we will be sharing parts of our revenues with other cashless provider. But we will become the ubiquitous provider of that solution. We'll become the de facto platform, and you'll be able to park anywhere using a Ringo app.
that's a great vision. And I think, you know, one of the points you touched on earlier is just about how cashless providers can actually distinguish themselves. Because I've always been a bit bemused as to why any of these providers actually pigeonhole themselves just in parking. There's such a world out there. Why are they not offering services whereby you can pay for fuel, especially with EV charge points coming into play as well? So there's so many opportunities. So it's great to hear that, you know, organizations are thinking more innovatively, considering that they are an innovation-based company. So it only makes sense. So, you know, what do you see on the horizon now with the parking industry and, I guess, Ringo? How do you see things playing out with, obviously, COVID, and what sort of impact do you think it will have on the industry as a whole?
Collis, consolidation. I think that's the number one thing. So if you think about it in a bizarre way, when I go to work in the mornings, when I go to my office, there are more cars on the road than ever before. That's quite scary, because when I go to London, there's no one on the trains. When I go on the tubes, there's no one on the tubes. My sales director was in London yesterday and he said it was eerie. There was no one on the tube. There was no one on the trains. I think that's going to continue for some period of time. And I think the first thing that's going to happen is all of us are going to change our work-life balance. As a senior person in a company, I was talking to my leadership team today, I was saying that we all have to change. I can no longer expect everyone to come into this one office anymore on a daily basis from 8 o'clock to 6 o'clock. Those days are gone, absolutely gone. And because they're gone, I have to change my style as a leader. And I've got to say to people, right, okay, if you want to come in 2 days a week or 3 days a week, that's absolutely fine. We've just got to start managing our productivity in that way. Instead of managing this large community, we've got to start managing people in many ways. So that's the first thing. The second thing is eventually this industry, as we know it as parking, has got to consolidate itself into a few players. And those few players, maybe no more than two, maximum three, because that's all the market's gonna have space for. And though one of those three will be the de facto standard, that will be the ubiquitous solution that provides a platform for the other two. So wherever you go in the country, you will be able to pay using that one solution.
And I think but I think that's where if we want people to fully embrace a sort of, not a cashless society, but let's just talk about the parking industry, a cashless industry, you need to make it as straightforward as possible. And as you say, sort of having like a brain with the apps plugging into that, meaning that, you know, if somebody wanted to have the Ringo app because they like the app, they can use that. But there could be a master brain which Ringo plugs into. So everyone could just have one app on their phone and it can pay for any of the providers. But I was in Berlin, Germany, sort of start of August, end of July. And being the parking geek that I am, couldn't help myself but look at the P&B machines. And on the side of their machines, it's confusing because they're multi-vendor. So there was sort of three or four different apps that I've recognized, and then some other apps, which I assume are probably small tech firms that are based in Germany or sort of Central Europe. Not that that gave me anxiety, but you just look at you and you think, it's in German, I don't speak German, so it's hard enough as it is anyway. When you're seeing loads of different logos you recognize, you just think, what is going on here? It doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
It's too mad. It's absolutely too mad. I equate it to this. I love listening to radio. I'm a really old-fashioned geek in that sense. I love radio. I love radio more than I love TV by some significant margin. So I'll listen to jazz one day. I'll listen to classical one day. I'll listen to rock one day. I very rarely listen to hip-hop, but I do like R&B. And I like a lot of talk radio. Am I going to have an app for every single one of my specialities that I like? Hell no. I did for a while,
and it drove me mad.
Oh, absolutely.
Radio X app, the LBC app, the KISS app, and it was just...
Can't do it. Can't do that anymore. So I have one app, and that app is the consolidator for everybody. My life is happy. That's the future.
But the question is, who's going to do that? Because from a business perspective, why would Park Now want to open doors for some of the smaller players to be knocking on the door and saying, because of this brain, you can put us in your car park as well. So who's going to be that person to take that stand? Would it be, you know, someone like the BPA, who are sort of the governing body for the private industry, well, private industry, so to speak, or local authority as well? Or is it going to be just, you know, a small little tech firm out of nowhere that sees this opportunity and goes, right, okay, we're going to do it and charge any of the big app providers, you know, a license fee to get on our platform?
Yes. In my experience, it's going to be an innovative startup that's going to do that. But in reality, it will be Park Now. But it will be in conjunction with the BPA, and it has to be in conjunction with the local authorities. And there'll be a couple of other key players in that. The things that you need to be able to do that, you need scale, first and foremost. Mm. The second thing that you need is you've got to have the innovation within your technology to be able to do that. And the third thing, the all-encompassing thing, you need money. Those three things Park Now has and Park Now can fulfill that, certainly within the short to midterm. But it's essential that happens, because ultimately the consumer drives everything, I believe. The consumer will drive it at the end of the day. And I think that's exactly what the consumer wants.
And there's a fourth thing there, which you haven't listed, which, well, I personally think is a fourth thing, is reputation. Because if a small startup firm, two individuals approach Park Now saying, this is our idea, we want to do this, they'd probably be laughed at the door, similar to how you was laughed at the door at Kodak when you said about the internet. Not just with the app providers, but it's the back office solutions that the local authorities, the private operators use. They all need to talk to each other, and a lot
absolutely
of people
right.
don't want to start sharing APIs. I know there's NDAs that can be signed, but a lot of people don't want to start sharing APIs with people they've essentially unheard of. So it does need to be someone that's been in the market for a while, has a bit of clout and reputation about them, where people are going to take them serious. Because it's just two random blokes come knocking on our door saying, look, this is our idea.
Well, let me answer that. I think Ringo Park Now is a very different company now than it was even 12 months ago. And I do mean a significantly different company. And one of the big significant changes that we've gone through is that we realize that we can't do everything ourselves. We can't be the God-defining proprietor of this marketplace. The only way you're able to sustain and grow is partnerships. And the partnerships of, yes, some of the established players out there, but the real partnership are those two young guys who have this great innovative idea that no one's seen left the field. And you either partner with them or you buy them. Because if you walk away from them, do that at your peril. Mm-hmm. And certainly since I've been at Park Now, Ringo, we've been involved in some amazing innovative ideas that we've been lapping up and partnering with. And I think long may that continue.
And with everything moving to, digital devices, one of the fears that is very prevalent now is data. So, you know, what can cashless providers do to reduce the fears that are held by many people when it comes to privacy? You know, in reference to what you talk about in regards to one or two companies having control of that sector, for me, I'll be slightly concerned on how, you know, the harvesting of data and how that is then used. So, you know, what do you think can be introduced to probably give some peace of mind to motorists and users of the app so they know that their data is being used appropriately?
Two questions there, really. Let me break them apart. The data piece. Companies like Park Now, Ringo, have so much empirical data. Data ranging from the type of car you drive, the type of fuel, the journeys that you have. And using algorithms, we can start making predictions around smart parking, availability of parking areas. and going beyond that, digitizing streets, similar to the way Google Map does, but we're focusing on parking areas now and parking furniture now and collating all of that data and then turning that data into a dashboard, a real-time dashboard where I, at any given stage, I can dynamically track the traffic, the drivers, and pretty similar to surge pricing in Uber, I can change pricing accordingly in order to drive down those poor cars that have bad emissions, those SUVs, and start encouraging smaller vehicles and encouraging more EV vehicles into my towns and cities. That's available right now, gentlemen. We provide that to many of our clients right now. So data is a key part of who we are and what we do right now. The second part, though, and this is the all-encompassing important part, is how you use that data. We are PCI compliant, and that's really something that's terribly important to us as a payment platform. We respect and totally protect confidentiality of our clients. Our environments are incredibly secure, only limited amount of people that actually have access, and we make sure that we only use that data in a responsible way where we don't use people's names and addresses at all. We simply use that high-level data, and we use that data in a responsible way to provide information to government and local governments so they can better control the air that we breathe today.
I mean, just following on from that, it's been a while since I signed up to any of the parking apps, but if I remember correctly, I had to provide my name and I think even my address. So for the skepticals out there, it would be, why do you need that? Surely you just need the VRM and my payment details and maybe my phone number so you can send me texts. Why is other data being captured which isn't relevant for what I'm doing? If I was going into a bank to open up a bank account with my shoe size, I would start to question what they're doing with that data.
Yeah, unfortunately, we're like a lot of payment organizations these days, we're legislated by the sort of information that we have to capture, purely driven by fraud. So that's the reason why we have to capture certain data that we would never, ever use. That's purely down to legislation. But again, I come back to the earlier point. All we're interested in is the core data. When not the personal data, the personal information, it's the core data. And using that core data in a responsible way to be able to provide that information to local authorities and governments so they can focus on making sure the air we breathe is much, much cleaner and greener than ever before.
In the current climate, it almost feels like the whole green initiatives have gone out the window. We're all this encouraging to, you know, drive to work and things like that. You know, it's as you say, there's more cars on the road than ever. You know, it's just quite worrying in some respects.
Yes.
Do you feel, I mean, that some users could be alienated from using a car park if there is no cash option? There are a few people out there that do like to leave as little breadcrumbs of where they've been as possible. So by not having a cash option and only being card or app, do you feel that's alienating some of the motorists out there?
I think there's always an element that you will never, ever be able to either please or satisfy. Mm. That goes for everything in life, doesn't it? I think the reality is that as long as we can respect and support the overwhelming majority, then we're behaving like a responsible organisation. And that's what we're doing to date.
Where would you like to see the industry in following years? Say 5 years from now, you know, you shared some of the ideas that you have for Ringo, but the parking industry as a whole, because you deal with not just local authority, it's private parking operators. So yes. There's two questions here. What do you think the future holds for private parking operators? Because equally as, you know, that whole payment process is evolving, there's a strong likelihood that in years to come, because of the technological advances that we have, that actually yes. Enforcements might start becoming redundant. So, you know, what do you see happening for private operators? Where do you see things going for them?
For me, the biggest area of growth, certainly over the next 5 to 10 years, is going to be off-street parking. Why? Because more and more local authorities are trying to push cars out of their cities. And I think in 5 years' time, it'll become so relevant that you can't park within a mile of the city where you live or where you want to drive. You have to take a park and ride of some sort. And I think that'll become prevalent up and down the country. So therefore, the need to have more off-street parking is going to be a bigger requirement than ever before. Whether that's barrier, whether that's non-barrier, that's going to be a much bigger area. And I do think private operators have an opportunity to certainly move into that area more and more. In addition to that, I think private operators will start to balance out a way, and you touched upon it earlier, Ryan, before we went live, private operators being a lot more responsible in terms of not making money purely out of PCNs, but starting to make money out of other areas. I think the parking area has got a bad rap for many ways, the right reasons, and some ways the wrong reasons. And I think it's incumbent upon all of us to ensure that the parking industry is a much more mature and much more professional and positioned as a much more innovative area than it currently is today. And I think technology is going to be a big driver behind that.
Okay, so you think technology will be the answer?
Absolutely, 100%.
Mm-hmm. Brilliant.
Just sort of touching on that, sort of the whole private operator, while it's not your field of expertise because you're in the industry but not a private operator, so to speak, there are people that would say they're getting rid of cash to try and catch people out because not everyone's got a smartphone that can pay by app. You know, what would your response be? Is it people trying to catch people out, or is it deeper than that and it's more of this is where we're going, you've got to sort of kind of adapt or, well, evolve or become extinct?
And I think, so just following on from that, and I think one of the, I don't want to use the term disadvantages. Well, I will say the disadvantage because it provides a lot of advantages also, but we have to be honest, is that, you know, with the introduction of technology, the emphasis or the emphasis comes away from the customer or the motorist. And so we're relying upon that technology where we know historically mistakes can happen. Do you feel that motorists are perhaps justified in their concerns about systems being more technology driven? As opposed to just having a car park warden placed within the car park, they have to put the money in the machine or hand money over to a warden. What's your thoughts on that, Gav?
I think we've evolved. I think it's evolution. And I think the idea of having a machine that's full of cash on a Friday night is bizarre to me. I don't think there's a requirement for that anymore. Having a man walking around checking the machines to make sure the cash is there and it hasn't been robbed is bizarre to me. Having a man walking around just issuing tickets, I don't think there's a necessity for that. I think we've moved on, evolution, and we've got to recognize that we have the technology, whether it's in the ground or whether it's in the cloud, to be able to read everything and monitor everything. And I know some people hate the fact that we live in this big brother bubble, but that train left the station 20 years ago. And whether we don't like it or not, we are in it. And that's not going to change. Now, should we allow it to be abused? No, we should always make sure that companies like ourselves are completely responsible at all times. And it's my job as a senior exec, as well as my colleagues, to ensure that we manage our organization with the greatest level of credibility and integrity there is to date. So technology is here to stay. It's going to drive the way we work, the way we operate, and it's going to become ever more so. I read a book many years ago and it said technology should help improve that work-life balance. There's an argument to say COVID has done that, but at the end of the day, we wouldn't be having this conversation if it wasn't for the innovation of technology. Companies, I remember reading a few months ago, Zoom was going out of business. It wasn't getting enough money. Now Zoom is making more money than it can ever make, and it's trying to buy enough bandwidth, and that's innovation. And I think the one thing COVID has done, if it's done anything at all, it has demonstrated to us that we need technology more than ever. and we can utilize technology much more in order to get that work-life balance that a lot of us were missing. Mm. So I'm a big proponent of technology. I'm a big fan of it being used in the right way.
Mm. Oh, I mean, me too. I mean, as Ryan would sort of vouch for, I'm sort of a bit of a computer fanatic, a geek, yeah, you can use the term geek, you know, anything technology. I'm always looking at a screen, but somehow still have 20/20 vision. So for me, you know, it's perfectly great. But as you said, the sort of example used earlier of Doris, who goes to pick up her newspaper and coffee, I only knew what PayPoint is just from making assumptions. So do you think there's still things left to be desired in terms of getting that information out there to perhaps the older generations?
Yes.
Because sort of conversations I've had with friends and family, a lot of them aren't aware of the other methods because it's very much in the small print.
Agreed.
So what can be done to actually improve that message? So, you know, because I went into this almost thinking that, you know, you've either got to use an app or not. So I've learned something today in terms of the accessibility and it not being sort of discriminatory against sort of people's access to technology or devices, etc. So sort of where do you see it going in terms of getting that word out there to make people aware of that?
Yeah. And the irony, of course, was that this was going to be the big year where we were going to do a large promotion on PayPoint and being able to enable people to be able to use our solution in a variety of different ways. COVID got in the way and we haven't been able to make that promotion, but it is certainly our intention that certainly as we go into 2021 to do a lot of promotion around radio, a lot of promotion around print, and a lot of promotion around our signage, indicating that there are more than one way to actually pay for parking. You don't have to have an app. You can actually go into somewhere like PayPoint and pay with hard cash.
Mm. So I think that's one of the biggest things I've noticed. Sort of my local, funny enough, Park now just taken over my local borough, London Borough of Havering. So yes, the signs are up everywhere. Machines are starting to be black bagged and covered up.
Yes.
And sort of it is just, I'm unfamiliar with it, so it's all right. But for a lot of people, I see them looking at the signs confused. And I've actually had to help a few people. They've used the sort of the telephone IVR because they haven't got a smartphone. They're using sort of a big brick. But I guess it's more of a dig at local authorities because their signs are often very small. And I guess to get the message out there that you need something a lot bigger, maybe a map to say, you know, pay here.
Yes.
So I guess it does leave a lot to be desired from the, sort of, the car park sort of providers as well. I guess it's a service that we were to start to provide. Ryan, we would need to look at that as well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I think, you know, irrespective of how many signs you put up and how you communicate, there's always going to be that segment of society that is never going to be ready for that shift. Yeah, they're still very much old hat and have that prehistoric way of thinking and prefer the way that life was before. And so we're going to continue to hold on to it. We spoke about it before, holding on to old paradigms. So yes. I think, you know, irrespective. So I think your attention has to focus on the majority and just have that understanding that it isn't going to be for everybody. And the choice is theirs, that technology is readily available for them. And it's up to them if they want to, you know, accept it or not. But I think one of the important things, I agree with you totally, Gav, that I do believe technology has a place. And it can be used to make our lives so much better. As you say, improve our work-life balance. We didn't have to come and meet you today. You didn't have to come down to the office. We was able to do it via Zoom. It's so much more convenient. But I think it is just how the technology is used and the intent behind it. And I think cashless payment systems, amazing. And it's definitely something that I feel will improve the industry as a whole, making things so much more easier, more convenient and instant, as opposed to, you know, going to have to find chain of routing in your ashtray to find, you know, a couple of coins and what have you. There are things that I feel we do have to be mindful of, and that's, you know, how data is used. And we've seen it recently as well with Netflix, and I'm an advocate for this, I've been telling everybody, but no one's bloody watched it. Yeah, it's Social Dilemma.
I've watched it.
Yeah, oh, you did watch it. Okay, amazing. And there's a quotation within that, which is, I don't want to use the term powerful, but very eye-opening. And that quote is, there's two industries that refer to their customers as users. One, illegal drugs. Two, software. So it kind of highlights the problem of the software or the software market or that industry, that we just have to, I think there needs to be a greater sense of responsibility, a more positive intent in how they use people's information rather than just harvesting that information for income and revenue.
I'm totally with you on that. I completely agree with that. Totally agree with that.
But I don't think Ringo is sitting there trying to get people to stay on their app for as long as possible, like some of the providers in the documentary.
I don't know.
I guess if Ringo ever keeps it involved, people are on their app as little as possible because the payment's that easy. They open the app, they press a button, and it's done. So
exactly.
they're trying to achieve the opposite of what's done for sort of social media giants.
I think with all technology companies, that the more use the app has, the more valuable it becomes. So irrespective is this social media, irrespective it's a payment app, the more you're using it, the more transactions are happening. Whether that be you're the transaction and your attention is being used for advertising, or if it's just a payment transaction for you parking or, you know, purchasing a loaf of bread or what it may be. So I think the two rules apply, but it's just how it's done. But we're moving into territory we don't really. I'm not going to beat you down the rabbit hole, don't worry. But it's been amazing having you on, Gav. Obviously, giving some insight to the industry, where the cashless parking sector's going and your vision for PartNow. So I keep on meaning to refer to it as Ringo, but it's PartNow. It's been amazing having you on, and thank you for sharing your insights with us. Wish you all the best for the future, you and PartNow also.
Thanks very much, guys. It's been great being on. It's always good to have lucid conversation, and particularly not just to talk about what we do now, but to elevate the conversation a little more intellectually about where we're going in the future and doing it in a responsible way. So, guys, I really would like to thank you very much for your time. And anytime I can help out again, don't hesitate to make contact, all right?
Excellent. Thanks for your time today. I've learned something new, so I'm sure there's going to be at least one other individual out there that's learned something today.
Thanks, guys. Have a safe day.
All the best.
And that's it for another episode of Break the Mould, the parking podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's show. If you did, tell a friend, tell a colleague, pass the pod. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time with another special guest. So until then, thank you for listening as we break the mould.